One of the most vivid experiences I've ever had realizing I was wrong, and it's happened more often than I like to admit, happened when I was in junior high school. And forgive me if I've told you this story before. As many of you know, I was raised in a Unitarian Universalist congregation, one that included people from many backgrounds. And so, as a child, I remember learning about all different kinds of faiths and traditions. But in particular, I remember the ways our church observed the Jewish and Christian holidays because most of the people in that church came from Jewish or Christian roots. About a third of my home congregation identifies as Jewish. My Sunday school classes had done a great job teaching me that Christianity owed its existence to Judaism. I remember learning about the Jewish roots of things like communion. So when a Methodist friend invited me to go to church with her one Sunday in December that happened to fall during Hanukkah, I thought I knew what to expect. But as the service unfolded, I couldn't understand why there was no menorah up on the communion table next to the cross. "Why don't you celebrate Jewish holidays in a Christian church?" I asked her pastor. "After all, Jesus was Jewish." I was really confused. I think the illustration of the coyote cartoon in this morning's first reading is a great way to describe what it feels like to realize we're wrong. Having been raised with a distinctly Unitarian Universalist worldview my whole life up to that point, I'd had this impression that Christian churches were basically just Jewish plus Jesus. That's the equation that I had in my mind. I didn't know that for the vast majority of Christian churches, this was not the case. I mean, I knew a lot of facts about the two faiths, yet I'd had no exposure to their worship or to the attitudes that Christians and Jews had about one another's faiths. I didn't know what I didn't know. I didn't know I was already out over that cliff. And it never even occurred to me that I could be wrong about this until I was faced with the truth. Just as Catherine Schultz writes, it wasn't that I was right up until I realized I was wrong. I had been wrong the whole time, even though I'd felt right. I'd gone through my whole life so far with an erroneous idea. And when that idea was challenged, I felt what Dr. King refers to in his letter from a Birmingham jail as creative tension. Here's a quote from that letter about creative tension. Nonviolent direct action, and he's talking about things like, you know, peaceful demonstrating, blocking traffic, doing a die-in, so far, so forth. Nonviolent direct action seeks to create such a crisis and foster such a tension that a community which has constantly refused to negotiate is forced to confront the issue. It seeks to so dramatize the issue that it can no longer be ignored. My citing the creation of tension as part of the work of the nonviolent resistor may sound rather shocking, he writes, but I must confess that I am not afraid of the word tension. I have earnestly opposed violent tension, but there is a type of constructive, nonviolent tension which is necessary for growth. Having any assumption or attitude challenged can create this kind of tension inside of us. Our belief system can be a lot like a tower, if you think about it. None of us really likes to think about what might happen if an assumption or a belief way down at the foundation crumbles or is taken out, because it might topple over all the other beliefs that rest on top of it. And I think that's why so often it's just easier to ignore the tension and stick to our assumptions, even if we suspect there might be more to the whole truth. It might be easier to ignore tension But easier does not always mean better, unfortunately. The Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. felt that this kind of tension was powerful. So powerful, in fact, that the movement he led hinged on it. It was this kind of tension that arose inside of people who supported Jim Crow laws, tension encouraged by African Americans and their allies who refused to respond with violence to the violence waged upon them for doing things as simple as walking across a bridge or sitting at a lunch counter. The absurdity of using force against people seeking to do such simple, peaceful things created tension in the minds and the hearts of millions. Millions who'd been knowingly or unknowingly living with the assumption that white people were entitled to live with more rights than everybody else. Many people come to our faith disillusioned with the religions of their childhood, fed up with institutions that they feel sacrifice what is right for the sake of a hierarchy, that sacrifice justice for the sake of doctrine. And I don't want to burst anybody's bubbles here, but I'm sorry to say that our Unitarian and Universalist forebears did not always get things right either. A 19th century Unitarian named John Calhoun is perhaps the best example of the thousands of prominent Unitarians who vehemently supported slavery in the 1800s. A few decades later, in 1902, the American Unitarian Association published a book by then Stanford president David Starr Jordan entitled, and this is hard to hear, The Blood of the Nation, A Study of the Decay of Races Through the Survival of the Unfit. That was published by the American Unitarian Association. Sadly, Calhoun's support of forced sterilization of poor women, often of color, and his teachings about eugenics were not on the fringe of the Unitarian movement. He was a coveted speaker at Unitarian events for over a decade, and the Beacon Press published 19 of his books between 1902 and 1916. And then there were the droves of Unitarians and Universalists who supported the temperance movement, which, though noble in its goals and intentions, turned out to be a horrible failure when put into practice. We never talk about these historic Unitarians and Universalists who turned out to be on the wrong side of history much, do we? And yet it must be remembered that they pursued their work just as enthusiastically and passionately as Michael Servetus and Dorothy Dix, Norbert Chopbeck, Pete Seeger, and all of the Unitarians and Universalists and Unitarian Universalists that we so love to claim as our own. So, every year, when this holiday weekend, this Martin Luther King Jr. weekend, rolls around, I find myself incredibly moved by the struggle and sacrifice that Dr. King and so many other civil rights and justice leaders fared in their times and their contexts. But the thing that haunts me, the thing about every movement to bring about justice, no matter what time or place, is that the people on the other side, the people working to thwart justice, to maintain an unjust status quo, those people feel that they are right. Just as strongly as those whose positions stand the test of history. While Dr. King and the children marched in Birmingham and others worked in other ways for equality, there were millions of Americans and Unitarian Universalists who thought with just as much fervor that segregation was right. And that makes me wonder what attitudes or prejudices or beliefs I have that will turn out to be wrong. Which of the beliefs I cling to are holding back the tide of justice in my corner of the world? Because just like everybody else, I don't know what I don't know. and I may very well be running out over that cliff on any number of issues and have no idea. I'm sure that most of us, like Dr. King, have values that we hold about the worth and dignity of all people, values that we feel strongly about. These kinds of values form the foundation of our liberal faith. They've inspired generations of our forebears to do the work of justice in their own times and their own places. And I am not suggesting in this sermon that we become ideological doormats, ready at the slightest challenge to change our minds about the most important values that we hold dear. But I do think that living with intention means letting go of the need to be right. And we liberals have quite a need to be right. Right? Right? I mean, I feel that sometimes. And letting go of needing to be right means paying attention when our attitudes and assumptions are challenged by something that would alleviate the suffering and oppression of others. If we're upset about someone trying to alleviate their suffering, that's a flag. In his letter from a Birmingham jail, Dr. King writes about the long history that churches have had in bringing about the conditions for this kind of creative tension in societies, in entire nations even, to wrestle with the tough issues. He writes, "There was a time when the church was very powerful. In those days, the church was not merely a thermometer that recorded the ideas and principles of popular opinion. It was a thermostat that transformed the mores of society. Wherever the early Christians entered a town, the power structure got disturbed and immediately sought to convict them for being disturbers of the peace and outside agitators. They were small in number but big in commitment." And here's my favorite sentence in the whole thing. "They were too God-intoxicated to be astronomically intimidated." Isn't that good? "They brought to an end such ancient Roman evils as infanticide and gladiatorial contest. Things are different now. The contemporary church is often a weak, ineffectual voice with an uncertain sound. It is so often the arch supporter of the status quo. Far from being disturbed by the presence of the church, the power structure of the average community is consoled by the church's silent and often vocal sanction of things as they are." Now, I am proud to say that this is not a congregation that typically remains silent about matters of equity. I'm especially proud of this congregation's history of working for LGBTQ equality, the work of our Social Justice Council around dismantling racism, and those who have been helping this community consider how we might join thousands of other Unitarian Universalists around the country in becoming a sanctuary congregation. And so, I am proud to be one of the co-ministers of the UU Church of Berkeley, and I'm proud because this is a congregation that is willing, time and again, to risk the controversy, willing to lean into conversation about uncomfortable topics because of our conviction that discomfort is worth it if it leads to truth and justice. I'm proud because this is a church with a proud history of challenging the status quo for the sake of sowing seeds of justice, a congregation with a commitment to being, as Dr. King wrote, a thermostat and not just a thermometer. And the only way any community is able to live out such a bold commitment, the only way any congregation can truly live out its faith in its community, is when its people are spiritually humble, mature enough to say that they don't need to be right, mature enough to say to themselves statements like this: "I may not have pollution ruining my backyard, But this man is telling me that my lifestyle is ruining his neighborhood. I may not want to believe this is true, but his life and health matter more than what I want to believe about the impact of my choices. I am not trans, but this trans woman is telling me that she doesn't feel safe going into public bathrooms. I may not understand her experience, but her life and safety matter more than my ignorance. I have never needed to have an abortion, but this woman is telling me that her life depends on having one, and her life matters more than how I judge her choices. I am not black, but this black man is telling me that he fears for his children's lives when they're pulled over for running a red light, when they have to travel alone at night, when they're exercising their constitutional right to peacefully protest the death of one of their friends at the hands of a police officer. What this person is saying might threaten everything I think I know about this country, but black lives matter more than what I want to believe is true about America. We may never know all of the beliefs of ours that are holding back the tide of justice, but we can be sure that the need to be right about the attitudes and assumptions that these and other issues bring up in our minds and hearts, it's a barrier to the search for truth. It's a barrier to justice. And as we are seeing play out in this era of alternative facts, the need to be right is making people on all sides of every issue hunker down even more firmly in their entrenched worldviews. Letting go of the need to be right, even about things we feel strongly about, doesn't mean that we abandon our commitments or we're ready to change our minds with the direction of the wind. But it does mean cultivating a sense of humility, a sense of curiosity about the ideas of others. It means striving to grow in a mature sense of self that frees us from feeling intimidated or defensive with others whose experience is different than ours. Instead, we can become curious, willing to lean into that creative tension of disagreement for the sake of what we might learn about the other person or their opinion. And what that encounter might help us learn about a corner of the world or human experience we may now realize we don't know as much about as we thought we did. And letting go of this need to be right frees us to take to heart the assurance that our free faith does not require us to get it right all the time. Our faith requires only that we let our lights shine out from within us by continuing our search for truth. As uncomfortable as it may be to shift our ideas when new truths merge, and by doing justice, loving mercy, and walking humbly, always humbly. Amen.